the Around the NFL podcast. Missed out on Dogecoin. To the moon!
Money's into that stuff. Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis. I come to you from a virtual room, back in the old virtual room, filled with some heroes. Mark Sessler, Greg Rosenthal. Wow, boys. Listen, this time last year, we were doing bunker casts. We were in the darkness. We were in caves and garages and had no contact with the outside world. This weekend, you know, really starting with Thursday, with the Pridecast, the first annual Around the NFL podcast Pridecast from Morocco's, and great feedback on that show. Everyone seemed to really enjoy it, and we love being back out there. And then Connie and Gonzo and Kristen, their friend, launched the latest Dad Summit. So we were partying at her place, and then there was a boat cruise out on Marina Del Rey that I was lucky enough to be a part of. Wow, that was a summer weekend.
Yeah, I was there on Saturday. Felt like more of like the training ground, the warm up. The kids were allowed to be there, part of the festivities. And then the boat was just like full on debauchery. But I give them a lot of credit. They had like good kids free stuff to play with. Like they were very on top of it. And then it looks like Sunday was just, I don't know. A lot.
Yeah, well, I'd like to. I missed out. We had a lot of soccer activities in our house, so I was playing that role.
Mark, you are getting a lot of mileage out of soccer is going on lately whenever there's any type of social engagement.
Oh, yeah. There. Well, no, I mean, I wasn't using that as a leverage to not go somewhere, but it didn't work out. But I want to know more about this boat trip because it sounds frisky.
It was great. It was a booze cruise. We had a nice crew there. My wife was there. Connie, Lakeisha, Handsome Hank, our great friend Deeker, Drew from the network side. Just like a really varied crew. A bunch of Philly maniacs like Channing Eagles and all this other stuff going on the boat. It was fun. But I got the farmer's tan of all time. Really one of the top farmer tans I've ever had in my life, where it's just like, it's crazy. It's wild. But that's part of being in the sun. And we're back outside around other humans. And that's awesome.
Part of being a farmer. I mean, you know.
Right. It's part of having alabaster skin, but living in Los Angeles.
That's
that
true.
Austrian skin, Dan, that you were talking about.
It does.
About.
Well, you know, I survived in the sun during the Pridecast. I made it. I just made it. I know you were tucked away in the shade, Mark. And then I saw you text the next day. You were like, is everybody else okay? Man, that sun was killer. Mark was like on a Tahiti vacation underneath a palm tree during the whole show.
That's what I don't get. I came home and I had like a killer sunburn, yet I spent almost no time under the sun. So something very strange happening in the atmosphere.
It's the lack of the Austrian pigmentation, bro.
Oh, okay. We'll chalk it up to that.
All right. Nice show today. Nice show today. We've got two more shows this week as we edge into summer. And this is a big week around the NFL because 18 of the 32 teams start mini camp. And we're going to kind of just spin through it, an old school bunker cast type vibe here. We'll just do a spin around the league, go a deep dive on the news side of things. And I feel like that's the good way to get us caught up. That's what we do. Cause Greg, you know, listen, it was a little frivolous. You know, we got loose on Thursday, had some fun, but we are a football podcast and we just got to like get very serious about that.
I mean, I don't think we need to get too serious.
Deadly serious.
If we had the juice to be able to pull that off like every show, I think we would. But I don't know if we have that inside of us to do, you know, it wouldn't be special anymore if we could do
that. I'm almost surprised that we reconvened before taking this little breakthrough. That was like a WrestleMania event for us. And now we're like in a...
That would have been a good last show.
Would have been,
right.
Yeah.
This is like a Nanuet, New Jersey, like undercard that people are apparently still going to be listening to.
Like
right.
we're Monday, Wednesday, and then we're off for 6 days, but we're still coming back next Tuesday or whatever. It feels like it's the last week of school, you know, like, and everyone's going to get out for summer break. But it really isn't. You know, you guys have your TV show. I'll be gone by next week. We've got the TV all right, show. And then like it all turns fine. Around pretty quickly is what I'm saying. It feels like it because the NFL is about to take off for a month and a half. And my kids are done with school as of Friday. So
you've got to love the fact that Greg's first move is to downplay the concept of vacation. It's not really a vacation. We're not really getting away. I mean, we're not right? really doing anything.
We're going to be back next week. Soon.
Yeah, I know, but that's depressing. I don't want to think about that until next week.
We will have some time off, but it'll be closer to the end of this month, early July. Yeah. But all right, let's get to it. Without further ado, we have sitting in because Ricky's still on this bachelorette party, which is wild, by the way. We got some dispatches, some
unbelievable
pictures, some
content.
Video clips, some crazy stuff going on with these bachelorette parties. And by the way, one of the people on the booze cruise was Ricky's girlfriend, and I did ask her, as the ATN Media Insider, I did ask her, are you really okay with her going to this bachelorette party where the bachelorette is actually Ricky's ex-girlfriend? She said she sniffed it out, had conversations with when the relationship first started, and feels comfortable with the situation. And I just wanted to say that's what Erica had said as well, so it all checked out.
I would say this too. I mean, Erica, in terms of what content we're getting from the party, and she's been very generous with sending along clips that I don't think would be necessarily put out for the public. She's the gatekeeper, and there is no hint of her running afoul of the rules. She seems to be to have her act together. Some of the other people involved in the lesbianic bachelor party, to me, do not seem to be playing by any rules on any level. So, I, if anything, Erica's, you know, done her job to contain herself.
Lesbianic bachelorette party. All right, let's do the news.
But anyway, Dan, Greg,
Mark, Sessler.
You got a huge fan down here. Some bloke in Aussie loves Dan Hansis. Dan, you're the best. That's my story.
There we go. Right. We corrected that issue, Mark.
It's been corrected. And by the way, like I'm not sitting around fuming over that event, but you know, I don't think about it. I think that Kyle is an ally of our show and one of our, and I, by the way, I thought about it enough where I've actually spoken to the person who spoke with Kyle, and I have full details on what that actual conversation was, and we'll just leave it right there.
Wow. All right. Speaking of which, we have developing news. We were looking for the mysterious Aussie, big fan of our program. And sure enough, the miracles of social media, we found him. And it turns out he's an actor with a really, really impressive IMDb page. And he's currently on an Amazon program. His name is Matt Leneves. Let's listen in on Matt's social media experience.
G'day, Dan and Kyle. I'm the mysterious Aussie from the bus. It's day 9 of quarantine. Clearly, Kyle's lost his mind. He's doing Aussie accent impersonations. He's locked somewhere in this hotel. I'm not sure where. We're not allowed to see anyone, not allowed to open the door. Kyle! Nah, he didn't hear it. Anyway, day 9's been made a lot more special because I've got a shout out from the Around the NFL. I've been listening to you guys for 10 years. You're the greatest, honestly. Dan, Greg, Mark, Ricky, and the late, great Chris. You guys hold a special place in all your fans' hearts. I just want to say thanks for everything that you do. And hopefully one day we can all meet. Take care.
What a class act. And you could see Matt Leneves on Amazon's Absentia. How about that?
Wow. I'll tell you something else. He was on a show because I went and kind of did a deep dive into some of his work. He's the one I spoke to. He's a wonderful guy. Total sweetheart. And he is on a show called The Offspring.
Thanks for breaking that news.
No, he's a great guy. He's on a show. He was on a show called The Offspring, and he appears in. He sort of shows up around season 2, episode 4, and he is like the hunky love interest. Like he sizzles on screen. He is leading man energy and vibes. So I would suggest anyone go check that out. He is a genuinely talented actor.
Wow, hunky, sizzling. I haven't heard Mark this excited since Brad Pitt took his shirt off.
I would have
a ton of time.
Well, exciting. That's fair, but I would have Emily, you know, she's in casting to take a look at his skills too. They are legit.
Wow. And to be clear, Mark, we didn't think that he like said Dan, Greg, and the guys. We never thought that, you know, that we were putting on Kyle. you know, that we're putting on.
That was very clear, I thought.
I think there was a bit of a game of telephone that happened with that interaction, but
that explains it.
That's fine.
I do appreciate all the tweets that have come since, seeing like, great to hear Dan, Greg, and the guys all back together.
I do not. I don't like those at all. They bring me no pleasure. In fact, they border on annoying.
You know, it did. It also crossed my mind. You know, Matt is a successful actor. I wonder if we have any other well-known listeners, like people that are successful in the entertainment field or, you know, sports and another sport or whatever. I doubt there's a lot of NFL stars listening to our show, but yeah, you never know.
I would wager no.
Like what if like Jack Nicholson was like a huge fan of our podcast? That would be awesome.
I don't think so, but
all right, let's get to the news. All right, let's start with Greg's Patriots. Stephon Gilmore, the 2019 NFL Defensive Player of the Year, star cornerback. You know, he is at a bit of an impasse with the team regarding his contract, and he is not at mandatory minicamp. The Patriots, one of these 18 teams this week. Everybody needs to be there, and if not, you're getting a fine. Gilmore is not there, and it's unclear if he plans to be there for the rest of the week. He's subject to almost $93,000 in fines if he misses all 3 days. Greg, we know how Belichick can be, and he is not afraid to move veterans. Do you think Stephon Gilmore is going to be on the move at some point before 2021 season begins, or do you think this is just contract posturing and they'll get something done?
I don't think he'll be on the move because Belichick loves Stephon Gilmore so much. He made very similar noise before last season, and they gave him some extra guaranteed money going into the year, which is very rare for them to do, where they didn't give him a contract extension, just like gave him a little extra money, which is, I can only remember them doing that with like Wes Welker. He speaks so fondly of Gilmore, and he tried to, Belichick did, almost cover up that he wasn't there today. Like, oh, there were weather issues, so we're not totally sure if everyone's going to get here. And they asked specifically about Gilmore, and he was kind of putting it off. He almost trying to do Gilmore a favor. I can't imagine they're going to give him some monster contract extension, so that's problematic. He's coming off a quad surgery, which is pretty serious for an aging cornerback, but I think he's all in it to win it this year, and Belichick is, in that they'll come to some sort of agreement, maybe with something similar to what they did a year ago, and they're not too worried about minicamp is my guess. Training camp is a little different.
Yeah, I mean, I think he, you know, Gilmore has a point. He's the 24th highest paid quarterback in the league. He's making about $7 million base salary. So it's just, you know, even his camp is probably saying, look, we've got to maximize your earnings. You're 31 in September. Let's get you as much money as we can. But do I think that you're going to get a massive multi-year deal? No. I mean, but maybe it's just what they did last year, because it would be atypical of the Patriots this offseason to suddenly start shedding star players. If anything, they seem like a team totally trying to bounce back and win the AFC East.
It's funny, like you mentioned that, Greg, about, you know, weather issues or having some travel. Like, this is the same Belichick who, remember when the bomb cyclone blizzard hit New England and it became a big story in January 2018? He's like, nobody is late for practice. I don't care what you have to do. And the guys were so scared of Belichick that they were all like checking into local hotels so they could walk to the facility if they had to. Now Belichick's like, you know, it's summer storms and things of that nature. No big deal.
Right. It's all about the player, because in that case, he was using that specific example. I remember it well, in the snow, to make an example of Adalius Thomas, who was on his radar from the moment that he signed with New England. And that was like one of the last straws. And I think he loves Gilmore, and Gilmore wasn't quite as good last year when he was healthy. And then he had a pretty serious injury. So he's a little bit of a question mark in general, but I just can't imagine they would trade him, because you're not going to get like another good veteran in return. The only draft picks would be what people would send for him.
In 2009, linebacker Adalius Thomas told ESPN he showed up 9 minutes late for a team meeting after a snowfall nearly caused him to get into an accident on the way to the facility. Belichick sent him home. The guy's like shaken up. He almost got himself killed trying to get to football practice, and he gets sent back in the car.
It's funny because they're kind of similar. They're two of, if not the two biggest free agent contracts the Patriots have ever signed. And Adalius Thomas was a total bust. And Gilmore, who, yes, okay, he's 24th in base salary this year, but that stuff is always a little misleading because when he signed the contract, it was, you know, it blew the doors off for cornerback contracts. And everyone was like, I can't believe they're signing someone to the number one cornerback contract in the league. It's just since then, it's been totally passed. He's gotten that signing bonus money. And that's why, you know, just sprinkle him a little money, Bill. Stop sweating the small stuff. You're out, you're on your boat and you know all this. Yeah, doesn't sound like he is. That's what I'm saying. Sprinkle him a few million and hopefully this'll go away.
By the way, over at the piers at the Marina Del Rey, Snoop has a boat out there.
Wow.
A big purple yacht. And there was another one, a really obscenely large yacht, called the Hotel California. And the, you know, how with the boat on the back, it's the name of the boat and then where it's from. And it was Winslow, Arizona, which is, you know, a famous line from Take It Easy by the Eagles. I figure that is Don Henley, noted dick of rock and roll, with a obscene, ugly yacht ported in Marina Del Rey. These are just things you notice when you're out on the water.
That's good dot connecting. Well, was anyone embarrassing on that boat, by the way? Did anyone?
Our boat, no.
On your boat. I don't know about the other boat.
On our boat, everyone was, I wouldn't say good behavior, but everybody was able to comport themselves with dignity. I saw one woman on a neighboring yacht, and we weren't on a yacht. We were on like a little party pontoon, basically. But a woman being, she was completely passed out, and she was on the top level of this like multi-million dollar yacht, and they had to carry her body, and she was a large woman. Had to carry her body straight down a ladder to get her down to the main level of the boat so they could get her off the boat and I guess get her into an ambulance. I hope she's okay.
That's like an alcohol poisoning scenario.
That's sun. That will get you. Yeah. And also, speaking of the, since we're in the Patriots realm, Greg, and you mentioned bus. Did you see this report from the Boston Herald that N'Keal Harry, and maybe this is just an observation and don't put too much into it, could be fighting for a roster spot this summer? This is a first round pick in 2019, Greg, and I went and checked out your projected starter series. You don't have Harry listed as a starter. Patriots obviously made some big signings across the board on offense. Would that be stunning to you that if Harry got cut third year of his career as a first round pick?
Did I have a note that he's not a lock to make the team?
Yeah, I don't. You didn't. I went to check specifically to see if you had addressed it. That's why I wanted to ask.
I should. He looks like the fourth receiver. But then if you're like the fourth receiver and you don't play special teams and he has been a stiff, you could very well see them do one of these fake face-saving trades August 20th where they trade him for a conditional seventh, which is like the condition is N'Keal Harry is no longer N'Keal Harry after we trade him, which, you know, they don't get anything for him. It wouldn't shock me. He's not looked good. Not look good.
That's rough. That would be rough. He was taking four picks before Deebo Samuel, 19 before AJ Brown. And then out of curiosity, it's like, who else in that first round is no longer with their team? And there are two interesting cases. You had one quarterback, of course, Dwayne Haskins, and then Giants safety DeAndre Baker, who had major legal issues.
Well, that's usually the earliest that a first round pick ever gets cut is training camp of their third year. And that's, even that's pretty rare, but that's always the, unless there's something crazy like the two guys you mentioned, although Haskins, I guess that was an all-timer.
Yeah. In other news, another Rosenthal favorite, Russell Wilson spoke to the media at the end of OTAs, late last week. And he addressed, you know, all the drama that swarmed around him earlier this offseason and, how in some ways, it got blown out of proportion. Let's hear what Danger Russ had to say.
You know, obviously I love Seattle. I love playing here. You know, I've had a great career here so far. I've always wanted to play here for my whole career. Obviously, I think there were some, you know, unfortunate frustrations after the season. Obviously, you want to win it all and do it all and do everything you can, you know. And I think everybody on our team does. We all want to win it. And, you know, I think unfortunately it got a little bit blown out of proportion a little bit.
Eyebrows raised. I don't know, like who's the if you're saying that they had unfortunate feelings and he's including himself in that would make sense.
I think he did a little bit. He was saying right after the season, there were some frustrations about how things ended, first round exit after a 12-4 season.
But you know who you are, Russell Wilson. You've spent years building yourself up to where you are. Your agent, forget all the off the record stuff that they were clearly doing. His agent literally went on the record with Adam Schefter and listed the four teams that he would be traded to.
Yeah.
And so they asked Russell Wilson, I don't know who it was, but kudos, because that was the follow-up to have about that quote. And he was just like, well, I just wanted to, you know, make it clear if they were going to trade me, where would I want to go? But the Seahawks were like, oh, we don't want to trade you. We never brought that up. John Schneider was clear about that. He was on the record too. To try to like paint that as like it was blown out of proportion. You guy literally went.
You
on
like how show. I just threw you a piece of raw meat, Greg. But I agree with what you're saying. He's a little clumsy with how to play the game. There are other guys out there that can do this in a way that doesn't lead to this type of, I wouldn't call this a mea culpa, but walking back certain elements of his offseason strategy.
Well, what about the anecdotes of him storming out of meeting rooms and, you know, being so upset with the offense? I mean, I think when he was at the Super Bowl sitting with Goodell, watching Tom Brady, you know, win it again after going to Tampa Bay and having incredible say and pull on a new franchise, that started him and five other quarterbacks down this road of malcontent status. And yes, it didn't happen for him. He didn't get moved. I think they addressed his concerns to some degree by trading for a couple linemen and adding people and, you know, re-signing Chris Carson. But like, had the Bears trade scenario been okayed by Seattle and Russell Wilson wants to finish his career with the Seahawks, would he have been okay going to Chicago? Would he have been okay being traded? Or just none of that happened, so now you're back in front of reporters and you have to make good with all this absurd drama that occurred.
Right. I just have some faith in the audience a little bit here. It's like, we can handle the truth. You don't have to, like, everyone sees through this stuff anyway. So, you know, Seahawks fans are going to love you if you play well. I mean, it is a tricky thing to, like, go back and, you know, get them back all on your side. But I don't know. Just be honest.
Speaking of malcontents, Le'Veon Bell, currently without a job in the NFL. He made some news early this week by coming after Andy Reid on social media, writing, "I'd never play for Andy Reid again, .. I'd retire first." And then this had one of my favorite headlines of the year. So far, the offseason, Le'Veon Bell apologizes for a public comment about Kansas City Chiefs coach Andy Reid, but does not regret at all what I said. That's not really how it works. Le'Veon walked it back thusly. "I said what I said, and I don't regret at all what I said. For those who have a personal problem with me because of what I said, that's fine. You have your right. Just understand I also have my right for how I feel about my personal problem with dude because of what he said to me." Bell, of course, was cut by the Jets in the middle of the season in 2020 after signing a huge deal with New York a couple of years earlier and bombed out there, went to Kansas City, didn't even play in the AFC title game and in the Super Bowl, and now is back on the street. And this is probably not a way to hang around in the league going public with this stuff, but that's what he did, and he's an outspoken dude, and he always has been.
Who would have thought a couple years ago? You know, you go back to 2017, which is great season. If we said in 2021, I mean, running back careers changed drastically, but like Wayne Gallman has a job right now. Tywan Jones is on a roster and Le'Veon Bell cannot find a job. And to waste the fact that, I mean, we're discussing this and it was, you know, it's a light time for the NFL and it popped up. And so, of course, we're going to. But the fact that this is something that was, I had to ponder in my mind, this stupid scenario, going after Andy Reid without clarifying what it was Andy Reid said. And then, as you said, Dan, a totally false, absurd, fraudulent, semi-apology that really wasn't one at all. I find it to be extremely mentally tiring.
Probably like his agent saying, hey, dummy, go apologize on Twitter. We're trying to get you a job. And he couldn't do it. He couldn't successfully pull it off.
A lot of apologies are like, "I'm sorry if you were offended."
This wasn't the worst ones.
This wasn't quite that. This was just, "I apologize, but I don't regret what I said," which doesn't make any sense. It's that time of year where this was a comment as a it was like a response to a comment in someone else's Instagram post or whatever. But I think the reason why it made news, not just because, oh, wait, Le'Veon Bell's, you know, still around, is no player has ever disliked Andy Reid. Like, that is the one NFL coach that seems to have like a 99.9% approval rating, and that every, like, is the ultimate player's coach. So when you talk on Andy Reid, I think then that got people's attention.
And it's funny, when he was talking his way out of New York and he was burying Adam Gase, everyone was kind of siding with Bell because everyone knows Adam Gase was in over his head and really bad at communicating. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, I think this one's getting like a little mixed up, because I think Adam Gase is awful as a head coach and a communicator, but I also think that Le'Veon Bell is a bit of a knucklehead, and now he's doing it again at this latest stop. You said it, Mark. In 2017, you could say Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley were the two best running backs in football, and neither of them have a job.
Wow.
Here in June 2021, both still in their 20s. All right.
The post Steelers Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown experience has made not just Mike Tomlin look better for keeping the train on the tracks for as long as he did, but just the decisions to let them go better in hindsight.
And one last note on this. Honey Badger, he chimed in on the controversy, or if you want to call it that. He tweeted, "These fellas blame everybody for their lack of success. That's how I know I'm built different."
Mm.
Oof. That cuts. It's a fellow star, Tyrann Mathieu. All right, here we go. Moving on. Kyler Murray, the former number one overall pick, entering a very a pivotal third season in the NFL with the Cardinals. And this feels a little tropey, a running quarterback sharing his feelings in the offseason about wanting to run a little bit less.
Trope alert.
Let's listen in to Kyler Murray.
Honestly, the way I see it is, you know, my legs should be a luxury, and it kind of wasn't like that last year. It was kind of me having to run for us in a sense. And you know, once you know, I was, you know, my shoulder was banged up or whatever, and I was, you know, I wasn't trying to put myself out there and take those hits and stuff like that. We kind of took a law, you know, hit a law, and you know, I think it was good for us. You know, I think it was a lesson for us that, you know, we can't be one dimensional. We just got to be better in all areas, all aspects of the game.
Mark, we were socially distanced in my old garage late last season. It was a Thursday night game. I want to say maybe late November when he injured that shoulder, and that maybe gets slept on a little bit of their season. And he was never the same after that. Maybe he's thinking, I need to avoid that type of injury happening in the future. But at the same time, like, this is what makes him special, right?
It is. I mean, it totally neutralized their offense. You know, they scored after that game 9 fewer points per game. And it was an offense that I found frustrating to watch to begin with, especially in the red zone. And we've talked about Cliff Kingsbury. But when you took away his running element, because, you know, he played hurt. Give him credit for that, but he wasn't able to just take off and run the same way. They were easily kind of suppressed on offense, and they fell apart. They were 6-3. I mean, that Hail Mary game against the Bills feels like a million years ago because the way that season ended. So I hear what he's saying, just because in terms of like career longevity, I mean, no one had more rushing yards outside of Lamar Jackson than him on the ground from the quarterback position. But if you do take that away, what's special about their offense from looking at them today? I mean, I just don't see something special at all.
Yeah, I'm glad I heard the quotes with him saying it, because I think he's talking about his own improvement too. I mean, I think he's talking about, I don't want to rely on that either. And we had to. He was on pace to break Lamar Jackson's rushing record before that injury.
Mm.
It's kind of like, okay, players are just better now in terms of athleticism than they used to be. But to me, he's there with Lamar and Michael Vick as the three best running quarterbacks ever, just in terms of just purely like good at running. He is an unreal. I mean, he still put over 800 yards. He made guys miss. And I think that was part of the excitement early in the season, was he was just making stuff up, but they did not have a lot of plays within the structure of the offense. And I think the other NFC West teams, which, you know, have some big defenses, the Rams and the 49, they seem to have a pretty good beat on what Kyler Murray wanted to do and knew how to stop it.
Transaction wire, the Dolphins sign linebacker Jerome Baker to a 3-year, $39 million contract extension.
Sell it, Dan. Come
that on. Is the same Jerome Baker coming off back-to-back century mark tackle seasons. Career-high 7 sacks. Good for you, young man. Get your dollar. Jamison Crowder going to have less dollars in his pocket this season after Rap Sheet reported that the Jets renegotiated their deal with the wide receiver. I heard from a little birdie, he basically got his salary slashed in half. So he's probably going to make in the area of $5 million on a one-year deal. And it's still not out of the question that he gets traded before week one. And finally, Nick Mullins, the former 49ers quarterback, has signed with the Eagles. A bit of an interesting landing spot because, of course, your favorite, Mark, Stone Age Pony, Joe Flacco, is there already backing up Jalen Hurts. You wonder if Mullins is a camp arm or a legitimate option for them.
I don't know. Mullins, like, I get that he's, you know, not maybe a starter, but Mullins did some good things in San Francisco. I kind of wondered if maybe, you know, with the Niners link in New York, that maybe the Jets would have gone after someone like Mullins. They've got James Morgan.
I think it's a little telling, to be honest with you. Why the like that they didn't Sala wouldn't want anything to do with it. He's sloppy.
Like, the numbers are crazy. I mean, remember they always show those stats of like the best yards per attempt in the first, like, you know, 1,000 throws of his career, and it's like Nick Mullins is there with Dan Marino and Mahomes.
Right. Oh, yeah,
I think he's a great example of like if you're a football fan or you're not like plugged in 24/7 on the team, you looked at some of his games and his numbers, you're like, oh, Nick Mullins is good. And then the 49ers couldn't wait to get rid of him, and then he sits on the market for all this time before getting a.
He was hurt though. He is coming off an he's coming off an injury, so that's partly why I think he took so long to get signed. I don't even know if he's healthy.
He has come back from an elbow. That is true. Not Tommy John or anything, but it was an elbow injury.
They of these three signings, the Baker one, it was such huge money. It just got me thinking how the Dolphins are very unpredictable team. And one of the reasons I think they're unpredictable is I don't know if like any team disagrees with PFF more than the Dolphins. PFF has a pretty large influence, I think, in the way that the media, including myself and others, talk about players. And a lot of times at these positions when it's like, well, I don't really have that hot a Jerome Baker take, you know, you head over to PFF. And PFF has, you know, buried him as one of the worst players. And the Dolphins also have made these moves where they've cut or traded players who are very highly graded at PFF. They seem to love their young offensive line with PFF hates. I don't know like what this all means in the long run, but it's like they just gave a guy who PFF thinks is one of the worst linebackers in the league like massive money. So we'll see who's right, Miami or PFF. The war is on.
Well, I mean, if you look at like what Brian Flores said about him, like Brian Flores loves him, and they've got Jalen Phillips, and you know, this guy can rush the passer. He's good in coverage. They also, though, like,
doesn't leave the field, which is rare for a linebacker at this point.
Do you re-sign Emmanuel Ogba? I mean, that's someone out there. And also Mike Gesicki, who I think is like definitely someone to hold on to, is in the final year of his contract. They're going to have to start paying players soon.
It's interesting with Crowder and the Jets. Last season, when the season opened, and it was a forgettable season on so many levels, but do you know Chris Hogan was their starting wide receiver?
He's playing lacrosse now.
He's now in the National Lacrosse League. And now, flash forward, I'm not saying the Jets are loaded at wide receiver all of a sudden, but all of a sudden it's like it's gotten to the point where Jamison Crowder, especially with the emergence of Elijah Moore, who people are going nuts about in every write-up about the Jets having an amazing initial camp with the team, that Crowder doesn't really have a spot. He was their clear-cut number one last year. We'll see how that all sorts out.
Well, I would like to say they should keep him. Yeah, I think smart teams need like four or five options now in the passing game, and the Jets are one of those teams that has it. It's awesome. And shout out to Chris Hogan, by the way. We were there while he was making some catches in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl comeback against the Falcons. Chris Hogan, a little bit of a forgotten player in that game, made some pretty big plays in that game, Chris Hogan.
Well, I actually lost a sandwich bet because I think I had a sandwich bet something along the lines of that he'd have 120 yards receiving.
Didn't go that high, but I know he had at least four or five catches in some big plays.
I blocked out a lot of that Super Bowl second half. But I do remember him more with the Miami Dolphins as an undrafted free agent. Chris Hogan, 7-11, always open.
Yeah.
He was one of those, the great underdog stories of Hard Knocks about 7 or 8 years ago. Greg, I want to check in here. You know, we're this on this podcast, we're tracking that Denver Broncos quarterback room very closely. Oh,
I'm not putting them in the show anymore. Let's stop this, please.
And you had pointed out, no, I think it's only fair. It's only fair, Greg.
Okay.
Because when you wanted to surface Von Miller quotes when he was apparently giving a little nod to Teddy Bridgewater as the guy he wants to be the quarterback, I must just let you know that Von's going both ways on this one. Okay. So they're asking him, they're asking him about Aaron Rodgers. And Von said, listen, I got to ignore all that stuff. You know why? Hold on. Wait a minute. He said, we've got Drew Lock. That's who we're running with. That's who we're going into the season with until anything changes. Greg, that is a shot across your bow directly.
Well, maybe he
Teddy talk.
Maybe he's a leader on the team that heard, you know, Lock wasn't too happy about these other conversations, you know, so now he's just trying to make up for it, you know.
I don't know. People have talked at that camp.
I think that one shook Greg up a little bit, Mark.
I think Greg does not want to go down this avenue.
Yeah, I don't. Hey, but so I Mina Kimes pointed out to me just you know recently, Teddy 17th in QBR last year, 13th in completion percentage over expected. Hey, the stats are the stats. The stats don't lie. You know they don't.
Stats
they don't
never lie. That's true.
They're having a tough time though. The receivers dealing with both quarterbacks because people are saying that Drew Lock's passes. Now I'm not saying the guy is Mr. Accuracy, but that they come in fast, hard. But that Teddy's balls, like Teddy's football throws, are like these looping arrangements. Oof. Where it's tougher to, they don't come to you as quickly. And so both quarterbacks are very different. Which one would you rather have?
I'd rather have the catchable ball. And we've seen those Drew Lockett rocket shots firing into the sideline since college.
I want that like Chad Pennington after his third shoulder surgery looper.
Comeback player of the year. He made it work.
Finally,
he was awesome, by the way. Since it's the total offseason depth right now, I do have a Chad Pennington take. Okay. I think he's pretty he's now like used as sometimes as a not a punchline, but it's like, oh yeah, this guy, he was nice, he like overcame like shoulder injury. People I don't think understand what a baller Chad Pennington was. He is historically underrated. Like, he had incredible quarterback skills, and if he had a better situation at points, like, he would have won even more games. He was a great player. That's all I'm saying.
I think what he really got dinged for more was he was in the Tom Brady draft, and he was a first-round pick. So everyone says, oh, the Jets, they blew it. Tom Brady won 187 picks later. But yeah, especially before he got hurt. One of the better Jet seasons of the last 20 years is when Pennington replaced an aging Vinny Testaverde, and the Jets won the division in a playoff game in 2002. He was a legit badass. Hurt his shoulder.
His next level, like the throws he could make and attempt because of his accuracy, he is one of the best throwing like quarterbacks of all time in terms of putting it where he wanted to.
Right, and great with the play action. He really was. He was the best Jets quarterback of my lifetime. Until this kid.
That's all. You know, that's all.
The Chipotle kid came along.
Wait, so Zach Wilson is now, he's already superseded.
I like to think so. That's the way I'm trying to be positive about this. In the news, I did a little search of this just so I had the article in front of me, and it came up the Spanish language version for ESPN.com, and I just thought the headline was funny, so here it is. Dallas Cowboys ven a Ezekiel Elliott en la mejor forma de su vida. Which means sound the trope alert, Graver.
Trope alert. Trope alert.
That trope means alert. Dallas Cowboys on Zeke Elliott. He's in the best shape of his life.
Yeah, we
super
did it.
Trope alert.
Oh boy.
Cecil's ready for vacation.
No. I mean, this I actually like
we all are.
I
we
went
all
back
are.
And looked at a couple other off seasons, and there were similar headlines in like 2019. Cowboys running back Zeke Elliott is still in Cabo, reportedly in great shape. Ezekiel Elliott's weight is at the lowest it's been since his rookie year. I will say this, if there's one thing, like one of the first conversations I had about football with Wes was about running backs. And he really, I think, bought into when you found a running back hit the scene in August in like truly great shape. Then they started to run really hard in the preseason. It was predictive of a big year. I mean, Elliott, if anything, played behind an offensive line last year that was an absolute injury-wrangled mess. They had their three best linemen, Zach Martin, Tyron Smith, and Lael Collins, played a combined 600 snaps, 618 snaps, 154 and zero. I mean, they just didn't, they were a hot mess. So would Elliott in good shape be better? Maybe. Is it a trope? It is a huge trope.
Well, it should be stated that his backup ran really well last year and looked better than Zeke.
He did. He had 100 attempts. I mean, I like Pollard a lot, but is Pollard suddenly like,
I'm not saying he's better than a peak Zeke Elliott. I'm just saying it's not like that line. I mean, if Pollard was bombing out as well, I just think Zeke Elliott probably wasn't the same guy physically last year. Maybe, and now he's realizing it. This is his money's involved here, because if he has another bad year, he's in trouble.
He had COVID, missed a lot of work. Like he is someone, he's a trope being in the best shape of his life personally. Like this has happened three times. He does, you know, for what it's worth, you know, I think it's tough to put this on players too often, but having gone to Oxnard very often, like on the first day of their training camp or a couple times, the story is always either Ezekiel Elliott is totally out of shape and winded, or Ezekiel Elliott is in amazing shape. And it seems to go every other year. Like, you know, and that just seems to be where he's been as a player. And often when he has shown up and people are all excited about it, he does play awesome that year. And when he shows up in out of shape, you know, then that's what happens.
I would, if I was, you know, and I will have a fantasy draft, like millions of other people later this summer. I feel like he's a nice bounce back candidate.
I agree.
I think so. He was on my team last year, and I shipped him in a multiplayer trade to Handsome Hank's son in about week 8. I'm like, I'm getting off this Ezekiel Elliott thing. He was
smart.
Highly frustrating.
Well done, Mark.
Well, taking advantage of a young child.
No, he was not a young child. He was making more. Henry's son was making more transactions than anyone in the league by two. But my team, Cats Are Overrated, was not swayed by that. I concocted a deal with him and we made the playoffs.
Plus he's my size, all of Henry's sons. Even like the 5-year-old is bigger than me.
The 5-year-old is larger than you.
His 5-year-old is giant. It's going to be interesting. I think he's going to be a professional wrestler. I'm pretty sure of it.
Something scientific is going on with that third child. He's far too large for his age.
Wait, it's Alfie, right? We can name Alfie.
Henry
will admit it too, though. Henry will admit there's something, he's said it, there's something, I don't know what the word would be, well, something unusual about it.
Let's just say special. There's something special going on there.
It's special. Bionic. It's wonderful, yeah.
He could be one of those pro athletes like Aaron Judge, like 6'7", 275, all muscle. Like maybe he's just, that's his arc. Henry is 6'4", or whatever.
The framework is there, yeah.
Henry was there on Saturday. Sheck, money. It was quite a
that was outrageous when I heard that. Guest Sheck back on the scene.
That's how they're mostly known as around the NFL guests. But it's like that. It was nice to see all these people I haven't seen in a year plus in the flesh.
Certainly. If you know how things work here in Los Angeles, certain people that live in if you live in the Valley, like Sheck does, he will never come to the west side of Los Angeles or its surrounding territories unless something deadly serious is going on. So for him to go all the way to where Colleen and Gonzo live.
Well, they moved to Mexico. So yeah, that's a long trip.
That was a show of respect. That was a kiss of the ring of Connie, ultimately.
Absolutely.
That's what I took out of that. There you go. Anything else to add here?
No,
I think things are pretty slow in the sports world, where the top headline right now on ESPN.com, source: Crowder takes pay cut to stay with Jets. That's the number one headline in sports.
Wow.
Now we're probably jinxing it and we're going to have to do an emergency podcast in 98 minutes. But that's where things are. But we got you caught up to date. You know what's going on around the NFL after the last 44 minutes.
We've done our job. I feel like I'm taking a pay cut at our company to keep doing this. I literally did take a pay cut during Corona, and there's been no like, hey, let's circle back and correct that. It's like, you'll be fine. By the way, we also took water out of the break room. Like, I mean, what next?
Do you want to use this platform to make a formal pitch to the powers that be to get those wages back?
I just did. I think if they heard that, they understand that I'm annoyed and I would like it to be addressed fast, quickly now.
There you go. You heard it. Now, boys,
I am getting a little head start. I'm heading back east for the first time in 2 years. Coronavirus took so much from all of us. I did not get a chance to go see my family last summer. I will be on a plane on Wednesday, which means you two gentlemen, and I'm sure a fill-in hero to be named later, are going to handle the show. I have full faith, absolute faith, that you guys can do it. And I look forward to not listening.
Yeah, I was going to say, please.
But that's it. I'll be out this week, but we got one more show. And yes, just to so the audience knows.
It's like the Around the NFL broadcast that I will be missing. I'm going to get my whole family around. we're gonna check it out.
I think you guys did a savvy job scheduling these vacations. Why am I doing all of this activity? I think I'm one that I should be in a sleeping bag somewhere. Up.
We're all taking.
Just so everyone knows, here's the schedule. We got two shows this week, two shows next week, and the network show is back next Friday, and then we're gonna go dark for a full week and maybe even the July 4th week. So we've never really done that before, but we thought this year, for a lot of reasons, it'd be good to take a little time. It's been a tough year, and just spend some family time, and we hope you're still there when we get back after that hiatus. But we're not there yet. Okay, let's go. Justin Graver, good job, buddy. Really nice work filling in for Ricky. And I'm sure when Justin Graver has a bachelor party, it gets as crazy as a Ricky Hollywood bachelor.
Oh, no doubt about it.
So that would be my guess, just by my limited interactions with the man. Thank you, buddy. This is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm, The Old Boss, and yeah, Justin Graver. I call him the Undertaker behind the virtual glass. Until Wednesday, heed the call.